Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with a Colorado Sun. It's Friday, May 19th. Today, it's time for our monthly dive into music, as Sun writer Kevin Simpson chats with longtime Colorado music writer G. Brown. Before we start, a quick message. Citywide Banks, a division of HTLF Bank, is a Colorado-focused community bank celebrating 60 years of helping companies grow and families thrive. They keep decision-making to a local level, and bankers are focused on providing impactful financial solutions for your business. Visit citywidebanks.com to learn more. Citywide Banks is a member FDIC and an equal housing lender. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Residents of Denver awoke in the wee hours of May 19th in 1864 to a roaring, fearsome sound, described by one terrified newspaper reporter as, quote, the water engine of death dragging its destroying train of maddened waves that defied the eye to number them. Built at the confluence of the South Platte River and Cherry Creek, Denver endured a century of flooding, with a dozen major deluges between 1864 and 1965. The first, which struck a town less than 6 years old, set the standard for destruction. At least 8 people died as the water swept away Denver's City Hall and jail and the Rocky Mountain News Building, among many other structures that stood precariously close to the creek bed. 5 of the newspaper's employees escaped by jumping out a second-story window and fighting the current to swim to shore. West Denver stood lower in elevation and faced the worst of it. Members of the 1st Colorado Volunteers, organized during the Civil War and based out of nearby Camp Weld, rescued and sheltered countless people affected by the crisis. For days, the only communication across the creek involved notes tied to rocks and hurled across by the strongest arms on either side. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun's 2023 Reader Survey is open. Fill out the survey and let us know your thoughts. Whether you're a Colorado Sun member, newsletter subscriber, or reader, we want to hear from you. Visit cosun.com/2023readersurvey today. Next, our feature story.
In a musty old hall in Detroit, they prayed in the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral. The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald. And the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up her dead when the gales of November come early.
Hey, Colorado. As always, we're happy to have joining us G. Brown, director of the Colorado Music Experience website. Go to colomusic.org, which is just the definitive go-to place for learning about everyone and everything that helped shape the state's rich musical history. Hey, G.
How are you, Kev?
Doing well, thanks. So I chose that intro music clip from The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald in memory of Gordon Lightfoot, who, of course, made a huge imprint on the folk pop scene in the 60s and 70s, and died on May 1st at age 84. That song, based on the true story of the ship that sank in a horrible storm on Lake Michigan in 1975, came out about a year later and became one of Lightfoot's bigger hits. And significantly, those lines about the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral in Detroit referenced in the intro, well, the cathedral rang its bell 30 times upon news of Gordon Lightfoot's death, once for each sailor on the ship and once for Lightfoot himself, which I think says something pretty special about the connection between a songwriter and the event that he memorialized. What do you remember about Gordon Lightfoot, G?
Well, it's no surprise that his journalistic tendencies, if you will, appeal to you and me as well. There's a wonderful documentary about Gordon that came out in 2019, I believe, called If You Could Read My Mind. And it's worth checking out just to see how hard that guy worked. That was his gift. He was always writing, but not just sitting around strumming his guitar. He wrote out the music, the chords, the charts, and always deflected praise because he just thought that was his job. He was a professional musician. He worked with pros and just out there being a worker bee. He toured incessantly even after his commercial heyday. I know you saw him many times when he came through Colorado, Kevin.
Well, he also was, and I had not realized this until fairly recently, he was part of that whole Laurel Canyon connection out in California. Came across some fascinating footage the other day of Joni Mitchell playing what then was her new song, Coyote, at his house, while Gordon kind of sat in the background and some other friends, Roger McGuinn and Bob Dylan, strummed along as she was, I think, still in the late stages of producing that song. So he was kind of a mover and shaker in those circles, wasn't he?
Yeah, his peers knew what he was about. You referenced Dylan and Joni Mitchell. That's rarefied air, and they held Gordon in the highest regard. So that says it all.
Well, I saw him perform twice, I think, in Colorado, once at the old Auditorium Arena and later at the Paramount Theater. And actually, he had scheduled a whole slate of concerts for this year as well that were postponed when he fell ill recently before his death. And aside from the distinctive baritone, he also became one of the better songwriters of his era. And I keep coming back to the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And gee, you mentioned about his journalistic tendencies. While that song really isn't my favorite Gordon Lightfoot song, but it's his most interesting, I think, in terms of the combination of storytelling and combining so much raw information with flashes of compelling poetry. Now, I love the story of how when more information came out after his song had been released, about the causes behind the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald that basically showed the crew to be blameless. He actually, in subsequent performances of the song, changed some of the lyrics to reflect that. So it was kind of like newspapers, we do corrections or clarifications. And and Gordon had that journalistic tendency too, is where he would change the lyrics of his song to reflect the truth of the matter. But let's shift gears a little bit with a clip from maybe his biggest hit that you alluded to, If You Could Read My Mind.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
Well, we lost another entertainment icon within the last few weeks. Singer, trailblazer, and civil rights activist, Harry Belafonte, whose career stretches back a little farther to the 1950s, but he left a huge footprint in the industry. And gee, you had the pleasure of talking with him in person. I can't imagine how cool that must have been. Tell us about Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, this was back in 2003 that my wife Bridget and I got to intersect with Harry down at the Tile Solar Music Festival, and just happenstance granted an audience with this guy who is more of a humanitarian than anything else on his resume. A wonderful man. I joke a little because he was pretty good looking. That was Bridget's takeaway. And, you know, one of those guys that I would hate if he wasn't as handsome on the inside as he was on the outside. Just a remarkable man. He knew about, Harry was known musically for bringing calypso music to popularity back in the late 50s, but that was a subset of the whole folk music scene. of the time, late 50s, throughout the 60s. And he recorded many people's material, including that of Gordon Lightfoot's.
He was big in terms of introducing Calypso to an American audience, wasn't he?
Sure. Deo, the Banana Boat song subtitle, or Jamaica Farewell were the two biggest hits. But again, part of a larger folk music scene that he was a champion of. Kind of put it aside to try his hand at acting, made some good films, but his greatest legacy, I think, is as a trailblazer, as a civil rights activist. That was his cause.
Well, I think we have a clip here from the song that that he did perform of Gordon Lightfoot's. This is Harry Belafonte singing "The Last Time I Saw Her."
I saw her face. Her eyes were bathed in starlight, and her hair hung long. The last time I talked to her, her lips were like the scented flowers inside a rain-drenched forest.
Well, gee, you know, some musical acts are bigger than any individual performers and ultimately outlast all of them. And you wrote about one of these in your Colorado Music Experience newsletter. And I confess, I had no idea these guys existed, but here they are celebrating their 60th anniversary and still going strong.
You're alluding to the CU Buffoons, I assume.
Absolutely.
An a cappella group comprised annually of students at the University of Colorado. I think their greatest claim continues to be that the group was founded by, I should say co-founded, by Dave Grusin, the famed film and television composer, ran his own jazz label, GRP, back in the 80s and 90s. Arguably the most famous and talented CU alum in a musical sense. He started the group 60 years ago, and they continue to this day.
And they continue to put out recordings, right? They have one coming out shortly here?
Carved from Oak is available on streaming services. They try to put out a recording every 3 or 4 years to make sure that every class, if you will, over a four-year course of study gets to make a recording. And there's some interesting stuff on there. They cover all the bases from pop to R&B to what you've got, just doing their a cappella arrangements thereof.
Well, I think we found a clip from a live performance that the CU Buffoons did of a song that I think they used this one as their encore, and it's called Tribute. Here are the CU Buffoons. Okay, let's move the conversation back to rock and roll. You covered the music scene at a really interesting time, G, and had access that gave you lots of fascinating stories, some of which I know you shared with me and with our listeners. But one I'd never heard until I saw you mention it in the Colorado Music Experience newsletter this month was your experience on the tour bus with no less than Journey. As they were rising stars in the rock firmament. How did this happen, and what was that experience like? That had to be amazing.
Well, it was very memorable. In 1978, Journey had existed for three albums, 5 years at that point, doing a brand of instrumental space rock is kind of what it was tagged. Great players. Neil Schon, the guitarist, had founded the group. He had previously played with Santana, joined the group at age 15, very much a prodigy. But Ainsley Dunbar, the great drummer, Greg Raleigh, the keyboardist and singer from Santana, had put together Journey, but they weren't getting any commercial success. They lacked a strong vocal presence, so they recruited, after various iterations, Steve Perry, who went on to become maybe the unicorn of arena rock as far as vocal abilities. A lot of good singers out there, but no one quite like Steve. He had just joined the band, and I was, as an aspiring writer, gifted with the opportunity to ride the tour bus. They played up in Casper, Wyoming, literally in a barn with dirt floors. And, you know, a couple hundred kids showed up to see them there. But then driving down the I-25 corridor to Folsom Field in Boulder, where they opened a stadium show for the Rolling Stones the next day.
Yeah.
So that bus ride was pretty great. They were all young and voluble, and Perry was trying to find his way within the band. We got a steak up in Casper, figured that was the thing you did in town, and he just doused his steak in hot sauce. And he said that was the secret to his vocal range, and that that isn't dry ice that you would see up on stage. Anyway, wonderful, wonderful experience. I kind of allude to the almost famous model, where back then you had access to bands to get the story, find out what made them tick, instead of the current, here's 5 minutes on the phone, don't ask them about rehab model.
Yeah.
From a publicist. Just to have that access was a real gift.
Well, how did you make that happen? I know that back then, I remember, you know, the stories about Bob Green, the famous columnist from the Chicago Tribune. I think he was kind of connected with one of the bands, Bob Seger, out of Detroit. I think he kind of had great access to them. But how did a young, aspiring, up-and-coming writer like yourself make it happen with a band like Journey, who I guess was also at a point where they were just, you know, rising at the
time? Yeah, that's the key. They were... they hadn't hit yet. They were on their way up. I was trying to be on my way up. And it was through the record label. They were touring in support of the Infinity album, that where Perry made his debut. And tour publicity, when the band is in the market, the record label would call up and see if you wanted to speak with the band. And I said, sure. And that was a very unique circumstance in terms of that level of access. Usually you get someone on the phone or get to sit with them in their hotel room, but right on the tour bus, just because of the proximity of Casper, just a lucky, grateful boy.
Well, when you listen to them at their concert up in Casper, I mean, did you have a sense? I mean, sometimes you hear an act and you go, oh, you know, these guys are going somewhere. This is going to be huge. Did you have a sense?
No doubt. I would say it was that album, Infinity, with Journey, hearing Perry's voice for the first time. Other examples would be hearing The Cars' first album, hearing U2's first album. Made my bones on getting behind that group early on. Yeah, a Cheap Trick, a few of that nature. You just heard it. You knew they were destined for big things.
So I went down the rabbit hole a little bit on Journey, knowing we were going to talk about them, and I had not realized they've had six lead singers, I guess, and Steve Perry, of course, being the most recognized, and then a guy named Arnel Pineda being the current lead, and you've had the chance to see the band recently in its current iteration, but how do they measure up compared to, you know, what you saw early on, and then, you know, witnessed throughout the rise of their career?
I saw the show in Palm Springs, which was the last date on the band's 50th anniversary tour. And the group's kind of a mess right now internally, various lawsuits going back and forth. Wasn't necessarily reflected on stage, but I don't know. You allude to the numerous lead singers they've had. they've only had one, Steve Perry, and the rest are all just people trying to fill those shoes, which is impossible. Perry was a unicorn. Like I say, there were great singers, but no one quite like that guy. And this young guy, Arnell, who has replaced him for the last several years, a talented young man, youngish man, I should say, in comparison to the rest of the guys, certainly has the pipes, but not a natural front man. And in the newsletter, I alluded to the fact that he came off like a kid running around a restaurant while his parents ate, and getting a little feedback on that. But that's how I felt about it. I prefer to cherish my memories. I don't begrudge anyone the right to work. You know, the rest of the Journey guys without Perry should sure get to be out there and playing for their fans. But boy, they're printing money and for a product that isn't quite up to standards. So.
Well, hey, if you had to pick one signature Journey song to play a cliff of here, what would that be?
Well, I guess you allude to that era of rock music, Kevin, and it was always fun for me as a fan, as much as a writer, when a band came out and hit their stride, made a record that was fantastic. There was always that pressure to follow it up, right? There was the old cliche that your first album or whatever album, you had your whole life to write, and you only have 6 months to do the second. The whole pressure of that follow-up, I would cite someone like Huey Lewis and the News had that fantastic album Sports, but then it's so, can they do it again? You know, are they going to stick around, or was this a flash in the pan? And they come out with The Power of Love for the movie Back to the Future, which is arguably their best song, right? They did it. You know, they rose to the challenge. And Journey, for me, it was after that Infinity record where Steve Perry makes his debut as a vocalist, wondered, man, can they write more great songs? And they came out with Any Way You Want It. I still remember hearing it on the radio for the first time and had that feeling, well, damn, they stepped up. They did it. It's a great single.
All right. Well, here's a little clip of Any Way You Want It. Well, gee, I don't want to let folks go without mentioning that Colorado Music Experience continues to add more great material to an already really extensive archive. Tell us about what's just been added recently. This is kind of exciting.
Well, I'm very proud of our audio archives. We have music tracks culled from Colorado rock history, various radio stations, various venues. One particular subset we're proud of are music selections from the Peak Lounge. The Peak was a radio station back in the 90s that was a real bastion of locally owned and operated radio, and the lounge was their performance space, and all of the great adult rock, if you will, artists came through and played there for listeners, as well as the staff, which made that unique. So we've got four new tracks this month that just went up, and ranging from Jewel to Rusted Root, a band out of Pittsburgh, world beat type of band. And the song Send Me On My Way is very familiar to people. It's been used in countless television commercials, shows, movies, whatever. But I always thought it was kind of funny. It has a penny whistle solo and some nonsensical syllables. I can't even approximate it, but all I would say is that the song title, Send Me On My Way, for us fans of garbled lyrics, is often referred to as Sue Me In The Whale.
All right. Well, I think we got a little clip of Send Me On My Way, so let's hear a little Rusted Root.
On my way, on shop my umbe sail, umbe tell you to run.
On my way, on my way.
Nobody see, nobody on. Well, pick me up with golden hair. Umbe sail, umbe tell you to run.
On my way, on my way.
Nobody see, nobody on.
Well, as usual, G, it's been a blast talking music with you, and thanks so much for joining us. Do you mind if we play ourselves into the weekend with one last Gordon Lightfoot clip? I promise it'll be a little more upbeat than The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
I think you owe that to the rest of us, Kev. You go.
All right, take care. And here we go with Carefree Highway from Gordon Lightfoot.
Let me slip away. Carefree highway, I got to see you, my old friend. Carefree highway, you've seen better days. The morning after blue, from my head down to my shoe. Carefree highway, let me slip away on you.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado's governor feels the vote of the people to return wolves to the state later this year would have been undermined by legislation to delay the reintroduction plan. So this week, Governor Jared Polis vetoed a Senate bill that would have required the federal government to complete a possible Endangered Species Act exemption before wolves could be placed in areas in western Colorado. Polis said the legislation was unnecessary and undermines the voters' intent and the work over the past nearly 3 years of study and work by Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials and stakeholders. Chris Tomer is busy this time of year. The Denver weatherman has his day job forecasting rain or sun for Coloradans. And then there are his clients in Norway, Alaska, and Nepal. Those mountaineers clinging to the world's highest peak rely on Tomer's precise forecasts to plan audacious ascents. Twice a day, he sends peak-specific forecasts to internet-connected climbers around the globe, enabling them to strategize summit missions. He's built an international reputation in the mountaineering world for his niche forecasts for mountains including Everest and K2. The U.S. Census Bureau says Colorado's smaller cities and towns saw the greatest population growth from 2020 to 2022, while the state's largest cities and ski towns stayed the same or got smaller. State demographer Elizabeth Garner says the changes come as Colorado's population ages and people search for more affordable housing. Keensburg, about 40 miles northeast of Denver in Weld County, saw the most growth, with a 65% population explosion over 2 years. It had an estimated 2,080 residents in 2022, up from 1,258 in 2020. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for the Colorado Dream Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of The Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.